Dave and Dejanovic, your morning companions for talk, analysis, and key perspectives on Utah's biggest stories on KSL News Radio.
If you're trying to move the chess pieces and trying to keep track of where everyone's at in Utah politics, it's nearly impossible. There's so much movement. Number one, let's talk about the open seats. You've got Congressional District 3. John Curtis is leaving because he's running for the Senate. Attorney General Sean Reyes isn't running for another term. So you've got a bunch of seats and candidates open for that. And then you have Mitt Romney not running, a third open seat. And what are we at? 8, 9 candidates for that. It is wild. And this Saturday, the Republican convention hopes to narrow down at least a little bit.
Well, it will definitely narrow it down. We'll see by how much. We have a couple of races which both have three candidates who already have gathered signatures and will be on the primary no matter what. But if we have two more candidates qualified through convention, we could see a five-person primary.
That is incredible that the dual path has changed things so much over the last couple of years, where you can go out, gather signatures, kind of force your way onto the primary ballot. You're definitely forcing your way on. You got to gather a lot of signatures, though, especially in the congressional races. You have to get like 7,000. If it's a statewide race, it's 28,000. That's changed a lot in politics.
It really has. And Dave was laughing at me because of my face when he said forced, because it is a legal process. But yes, you automatically qualify for the primary if you gather those signatures. And it is really difficult, and it has become pretty expensive. But with the convention, you know, we used to use the language that Utah was the only state in the union where you could preclude a primary if you got 60% of delegate votes. And, you know, you can still have that happen if people don't gather signatures, but we're seeing that less and less. We're seeing incumbents take precaution, gather those signatures, make sure they can get on that primary ballot. And we're seeing challengers make sure that they are also there.
And it has changed the way candidates are now spending money.
Yes.
So often when candidates were raising money, it was for radio or television ads or digital ads. Now they've got to raise money for signature gathering as well.
Yeah. In the Senate race, we do have a number of people running for Senate, but the candidates have already spent $7 million. Wow. And looking at the recent past, that definitely is a record for pre-convention spending. And the bulk of, you know, the candidates that are raising the most and spending the most right now are those that have gathered signatures.
Let's talk a little bit more about money. There's some great information out there. You try to track it. And Democrats who are up against it, especially on the statewide races, the local congressional races, it's not a big surprise that Republicans, incumbents specifically, have a great advantage. But let's look at the governor's race. Somebody that you know well, Brian King, is challenging Spencer Cox, the governor, on the Democratic side.
Yeah, we've worked with Representative Brian King for many years. He's hosted many Hinckley interns and been a great mentor to those students. And he made some news yesterday. We saw the Republican or all the candidates for these statewide races submitted their reports, and we could see how much they fundraised. And King's campaign is noting that, hey, since January, he raised more than Spencer Cox, and they're wanting people to take note of that and pay attention.
He raised $170,000. Governor Cox raised $155,000 in that same time frame. What stands out to me, though, in these numbers as you start breaking them down is, let's look at the average donation size. So Representative King had almost 1,300 donations, about $100, $130 on average, whereas Governor Cox had a fraction of that, 74 donations. Again, Representative King had 1,300. Spencer Cox had 74, but the average donation size was $2,100.
And that can be the one of the benefits of being the incumbent, right? He also already has a very decent war chest. He's raised $1.7 million in total. On hand, he has $700,000. And that's after he's already gathered signatures. We'll see if he has a primary. So that is really interesting. You know, he, as the incumbent, he can go to some of those big donors. But this is something that we've seen. Typically, the Democrats following Obama's lead in 2008 have focused more on those small donations, and they've figured out how to be successful with that. Trump has also figured that out, so it's not just a Democratic strategy. But this is something that some candidates are really focused on.
It keeps going higher and higher, how much it costs to run, especially even on a smaller scale for city council. Everything has just become more expensive. And I think we're obviously aware. Is there any way that you know of, or a way to scale this back? Because when I look at this and I think, oh, I've got to raise $100,000 to run for this, or $50,000 or $10,000 to run for, you know, a smaller local election, I'm just not going to bother with it because that's significant money.
I don't see it getting scaled back. I certainly, even this the past couple of cycles, I have seen people be very, very frugal and still win those local elections. Well, yes, by local. We say state school board. Those are actually humongous districts. They're better. Right. They're bigger than the state senate districts. But we've seen people still be successful with that, with really savvy marketing, with using their network. But we're also seeing some of these groups that help train candidates, whether they're nonprofit or for-profit organizations, really lean into training on how to fundraise. Because you are wanting to be a voice for the people, so you need to get the people's backing and get their financial support if you want to run.
One of the things and the benefits, I think, of the convention process is it doesn't require a lot of money up front. You can recruit, so to speak, enough delegates to get support, and you can do it on a shoestring budget. And we've seen candidates that have done that, that are don't have high name recognition. I think specifically of Representative Celeste Malloy, who kind of went from a behind-the-scenes policy person but did a great job at convention, garnering the support of delegates. And next thing you know, you don't have to have the big spenders, at least up front, to get the nod.
Yeah, I mean, hers, that was a nuanced, it wasn't necessarily about spending. She obviously got a huge endorsement from Congressman Stewart, and those were delegates that probably had been recruited by his campaign the year before. But I, to your point, especially for those legislative races, if you can focus more on delegates, it still takes money. You're still traveling around, you're still meeting with delegates, you're still buying the donuts, you're still doing all of these things. But there is the argument that, you know, is it cheaper to try to get delegate support than to get those signatures? And is that worth the risk?
It is a risk. And we've seen that even on a state level, state lawmakers that have thought, oh, I'm an incumbent, I'm not going to gather signatures, I feel pretty safe. And then sure enough, they get bitten by it. And they're out. They get primaried out.
Yeah.
So hey, when we come back, I want to get your thoughts on what races you're keeping your eye on right now, especially as we're looking at convention. What piques your interest? What candidates do you find intriguing? Up next,
Dave and Dujanovic.
I'm lucky today to have Morgan Lyon-Cotty filling in for Debbie Dujanovic today. She's the associate director at the Hinckley Institute of Politics, and we're going to keep talking politics because convention comes up this Saturday. The real drama happens on the Republican side. Right? There's so many candidates out there, and it is wide open. It is wide open. I want to know, what is catching your eye? What races are you looking at? And what is there some dark horse candidates out there that you're looking at and thinking, oh, they might have a chance after all?
That is...
I asked 12 questions in there.
It was fantastic. The dark horse is tricky with convention because there's not polling of delegates.
Yeah.
And so it's just so much of the analysis and trying to project what will happen is based on word of mouth and anecdotes and who's talking to delegates, who did a good job recruiting. So it's really hard to tell who is going to be a dark horse. What I'm watching, really what I'm so fascinated by, are the Senate and the third congressional races. These are both open seats. I love an open seat. It drives up voter turnout. People get engaged and excited. But in both those races, we have three candidates that have already qualified. And three is a crowded primary. Four is a really crowded primary. But we could, for the first time in Utah's history, we could see five candidates in a primary, which means you could win with like 25% of the vote.
Congressional District 3 is fascinating because John Curtis was extremely popular. It was very, I don't want to say his, every time he ran, it was easy because anytime you're running, that's difficult.
It's not, and he would say, no.
It's not easy,
it's never
Dave.
It's easy.
He joined us yesterday, and I get it, especially when you're running in the House, you're running, you know, all the time, you know, because you're up every 2 years. So he's decided he wants to go for Mitt Romney's seat. Or, you know, that seat. It's not Mitt Romney's seat. I get it, folks. But yeah, anyway.
We know what you're saying.
He's moving on. Who intrigues you? Who do you think in that third congressional, who do you think has a chance? Because, again, when you start talking about a handful of candidates, that makes things very exciting.
Yeah. Well, first, the overall interesting thing about the third district is this. In recent years, this is our most primaried district. Congressman Curtis didn't have a primary in 2020, but since that seat changed, since Congressman Chaffetz stepped down in 2017, we've had a lot of primaries. And so those voters are used to watching for this, used to vetting these candidates. This is interesting because we have three that have qualified with signatures. We have Case Lawrence, John Dougal, and J.R. Byrd. But what is interesting to me is that former Congressman Chris Stewart has endorsed Stuart Pay. And Stuart Pay also sought signatures. I've been watching it. I don't think he's hit that 7,000 mark yet. He's very close. So I'm curious to see, are we going to see that convention bump for Stuart Pay? We saw, as we were speaking previously, that really helped Celeste Malloy. I think you can pretty easily argue that Chris Stewart's endorsement and very key local official endorsements she got last year helped win her that race.
John Dougal's interesting because as state auditor, he received more votes than any politician in history, in Utah history. Everyone loved the John Frugal Dougal. You'll remember that. It comes in quotation marks, John Frugal Dougal. He's been our state auditor for a number of years, decided to step down, not run again for the state auditor, to run for Congressional District 3. He was a state legislator as well, so he's very familiar in local politics, has been certainly popular as state auditor. What do you think about him?
Name ID is so crucial, especially in what we call like low information elections. It's even though, as I said, these third district voters, they're savvy. They know to watch for these primaries. They know how to do their research. But at the end of the day, people are busy and they look for shortcuts and they look for cues when they're voting. And if they recognize a name, if that name has positive association with them, and the auditor isn't too controversial of a position, they haven't heard negative stories about him, they may be inclined to vote for him based on that. And they may be inclined to receive positive information about him, you know, as he's campaigning, that will help boost him.
It was the greatest marketing ever. If you're the state auditor and your nickname's Frugal, here in Utah, that is a slam dunk. And it's something I didn't realize is you could actually put that on a ballot because it would show up as John Frugal Dougal.
If anybody wants to go to the state elections website and you can look at every single candidate that has filed throughout the state, there are a lot of nicknames on there. And when it just ends up happening to be also like a campaign tagline or slogan, helps you even more.
It does. Okay, so that's the third district. Also, the Senate race. What stands out to you in that one?
Again, we're seeing some big names. We have John Curtis, who is mayor of Provo, member of Congress. We have Brad Wilson, who was Speaker of the House. Speakers of the House have found it harder to reach those higher state level positions we've seen. Some have been successful. Rob Bishop was Speaker of the House, and then he ran for Congress. But Greg Hughes will tell you, your name ID isn't what you think your name ID is. That said, Brad Wilson has been involved in some very high profile policy issues like the Great Salt Lake and other things. So those are really the two I'm watching there.
It's so interesting with Brad Wilson, and we're actually going to speak to the former speaker later on in the show. But it's fascinating because you can look at his history and his record and what he did as speaker and the things that he championed in tax cuts in a way that not a lot of candidates can point to a record of what they've stood for, what they've focused. Does anything, does having a name, I apologize, but quite frankly, as generic as Brad Wilson, it's not, does that name recognition, does that kind of blend in at all, do you think?
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, that actually makes me think of events we've done at the Hinckley. And if you get Malcolm Gladwell, you know, that's such a unique name. Everybody yes. knows who he is. But some authors or some political commentators maybe do have some more generic name, and then we're struggling. I hadn't thought about that with Speaker Wilson. Honestly, I think the thing that, when I speak to political insiders, the thing that comes up the most is that, you know, he was going to run as, you know, sort of the center right. I've got these conservative credentials, but I also work on these other things. Everybody identifies with the Great Salt Lake. But now he's having to sort of work around Brent Orrin Hatch, who is taking up some of that space. And people have argued that it's pushing Brad Wilson farther right than he actually is. So that's what I'm watching to see who's threading that needle right, who can speak to the delegates with that more conservative language. And then, as happens with every election and every, you know, every candidate, sort of move a little more center for those primary voters.
Now, gathering signatures for this race is incredibly difficult. I believe you need 28,000 signatures for this race.
Yeah. And there's only so many signatures to go around. Right. You can't sign more than one of these signature packets for a different candidate. So how many highly engaged Republicans are there that you can actually get signatures from?
Can I say that's my pet peeve, that I can only sign one name?
And it's confusing for people because you can sign as many ballot initiatives as you want. And maybe you like two candidates. You want to see them both on the primary, but you can't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, this is before the primary.
Talk to your legislator if you'd like to see that changed.
I have talked to them. I've let them know. And I want to be able to sign as many petitions as I want. Because I might like John Curtis, Brad Wilson, Trent Staggs, and Brent Orrin Hatch. And then I'll figure it out. But I want to see them on the primary. I want to hear more from them. So, Morgan, thank you. Are you out of here?
I'm out of here. It's been fun.
Well, I appreciate it. The last couple hours, Morgan Lyon-Cotty, who's the Associate Director at the Hinckley Institute of Politics.